Thank you, Bernard. And like everybody so far, I just like to share congratulations to the ITC for getting to this point of 50 years. And I'm also very appreciative of the focus and mission of the ITC, focusing on small and medium-sized enterprises and developing economies. We all know that regardless of the economy you're in, whether you're in the most developed economies in the EU or the United States or other developed economies around the world in Asia, that small and medium-sized enterprises are the biggest employers of people. And when the economy grows, it is generally driven by small and medium-sized enterprises. We also know that there's an enormous need in the world to start to equalize the per capita incomes of countries, and so the focus on lesser developed economies is also quite laudable. Having said all of that, as Director Fernandez de Soto indicated, we're not where we want to be. And as Daniel Godinho mentioned, for Brazil, it's small and medium-sized enterprises represent only 0.9% of the total trade. And that's not far off what it is globally, actually. And so we haven't made the kind of progress that we'd like to make. And the reason is not because small and medium-sized enterprises don't want to ship internationally. Any enterprise, if they figure that they can increase their profits, they'll do whatever it takes to increase their profits and to grow their business. And so they'd be happy to export if they thought that they could. And it's not just that they can't get financing or they don't know it. Doing a bunch of cheerleading or providing them with subsidies or even just working to put a fund together to finance them doesn't do it in and of itself. Actually, the biggest cost and biggest barrier that small and medium-sized enterprises face is the supply chain costs of moving across borders. And that's what has to go away. And they simply can't compete because they don't have the scale. Just to share an anecdote with you, as we've done some of the studying of this, we worked with a beer manufacturer that exports internationally and asked them how they cover the costs of their supply chain. They have over 400 people whose sole job, more than 400 people whose sole job is communicating with customers, customs and border patrol people to try and expedite products across the borders. So they're picking up the phone and saying, my order's sitting out in the port. I need it expedited. Can you get to that? And they're basically working hard to make sure that their product gets through faster. No SME that I know of can afford to have a staff of 400 people to work those things, and so their products sit at the border, take time, add cost, they have to pay more in facilitation payments, and so on and so forth. So these are the things that we actually need to get rid of, and I think that the fact that the world has now pivoted to a trade facilitation approach and focusing on supply chains, and to the extent that they do look at end-to-end supply chains, this is the most effective approach for small and medium-sized enterprises that has ever come out into the world. And therefore, of course, we feel that countries do need to approve the Bali Agreement as soon as possible because it's the best thing that can happen for them. One of the nice things about trade facilitation agreements is you don't have to be altruistic as a country. You don't need to focus on trade because it's good for the world. You can focus on it because it's good for you. And by doing the things that are good for you, you end up doing the things that are good for the world. This is really a classic case and an approach that allows Adam Smith's invisible hand to actually work. You can do the things that are best for you, but if you solve the problems of getting product out of your country, guess what? It also solves the problems for product to be able to come in as well. Now, it turns out that making progress on that is not as simple as saying, okay, well, let's go out and do some activities. And one of my biggest fears of all of this is that as we pivot to a trade facilitation approach, that there will be a lot of activity, but that activity will be, while necessary, insufficient to move the needle. And then people will become cynical about the process. What do I mean by that? A product will not move unless it is competitive, either on cost or quality or delivery reliability or some other element that a customer values, it will not move across a border. And so if you spend all of your time developing a single window system, and that takes out 2% of the cost, but an industry needs to have 5 to 7% taken out, not a single product will move. But the minute you reach that tipping point where the product is competitive, you will then see an explosion of growth as companies in those businesses rush to export because they're now competitive. And so you can't do things broad brush here. The devil is really in the detail. And so I'd like to outline 4 steps, if I were a minister of trade in a country, that I would take to actually make tangible progress on this. The 4 steps are, and I'll just talk about each of them briefly, prepare, diagnose, mobilize, and execute. Preparation is actually critical here. You need to spend some time making sure that, first of all, if there are some terrible regulatory barriers that need to be fixed, or some, as Minister Tete mentioned earlier, if you need to do some judicial reform, if there are some just fundamental things that need to be solved, you need to get those things solved. You also need to think about, who do we need to have to make this happen? What's my strength as a trade minister? Do I need the president to make a proclamation to make this something that is a countrywide priority so that we can actually get traction across the multiple stakeholders that we're going to need to talk to? What ministries need to be involved? Doing something on a national level might be important, but in many countries, there's many states, and each state has their own regulations, and you need to bring in state governments into the process. And so you need to think about, how do you set this thing up for success? And that may take as little as a couple of months. In some cases, it may take longer. The second thing is to diagnose your industries. What industries are close enough to a tipping point that you could actually make a difference? They're within 5% of being globally competitive. Let's focus on those industries first. Let's bring some of our own companies to a point where there is a tipping point and now they're competitive to ship out. The reason I say that you need to prioritize and focus on that is you then need to look at that industry's end-to-end supply chain and figure out how much you can take out of that supply chain. If they need to be 5% lower cost, can we take out 10% so that they're going to be clearly globally competitive by eliminating some of the things here? So prioritizing and focusing where you have potential comparative advantage but are not taking advantage of it today. The third thing is, once you have then identified and prioritized those key industries where you can really make a difference, then you need to put initiatives in place to actually re-engineer the processes and start to take those costs out. That's going to be a multi-stakeholder effort. You're going to have to draw in the private sector. You're going to have to draw in different ministries within the government and potentially different ministries from different states. You need to identify those. You'll need to have a steering committee. You'll have to have people in place. You'll have to put in place some targets, some metrics, some key performance indicators, and actually go after it. And then the 4th step, of course, is the actual process of day-to-day going out and executing now on those initiatives. If you can then execute on those initiatives, you can measure the progress that you're making, how close you're getting to that tipping point, and then ultimately how much exports change, jobs are created, and so on. This is, of course, a classic approach. For many developing countries, you probably don't have the expertise to do all these 4 steps. You probably don't have all of the resources to do it, and perhaps donor organizations need to help. But for the donor organizations, a process like this is critical, I would think, for providing some aid. And for the countries, you probably want to appoint experts who have some expertise in these things. And with that, I'll stop.